Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast podcast for the week of February 7th, 2022. I'm your host, Zach, and joining us tonight we have Chris.
Oh.
And we have a ton of stuff on this week. We've got Oscar nominations. We've got huge trailers, because I think possibly ties to the Super Bowl coming up this weekend. We've got tons of other news to dive into as well. So let's jump right in, and we will kick things off with the Oscar nominations, which came out on Tuesday this week, early in the morning, like they usually do. I guess usually they just do like a quick like, oh, here's like 10 minutes on like the morning shows. We're gonna like drop the nominations, but apparently that was like a full like half hour long like show with like bits and stuff that people were just like, what is it? Like, what is this? Like, just tell us who the nominees are. So I don't know if that bodes well for the actual show. It's the 94th Academy Awards, and the actual show is going to be March 27th on ABC, so slightly over a month until the Oscars ceremony. But we usually run down the big categories and just kind of like give quick thoughts or predictions or whatever other thoughts we have about each category. So Best Picture, which this year, I think they changed their rules this year, because after like the Dark Knight fiasco a couple like years ago, they changed the rule where it's like, oh, you can have up to 10 nominees. I think this year is the first year where like there have to be 10 nominees, like, because they've been kind of doing like, oh, we're gonna do like 6 this year or 8 this year or like something like that, but like I think this is the first year where like 10, like solid like 10. So yeah, so the Best Picture nominees this year are Belfast, Coda, Don't Look Up, Drive My Car, Dune, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, The Power of the Dog, and West Side Story.
It's weird that West Side Story snuck in there.
I think
these films weren't always like billed together, except for the one time La La Land did. Well, like, I think it's like a drama, and then here comes West Side Story.
Yeah, well, I think it's got the Disney juggernaut behind it, because it's a 20th Century Studios movie, but it's a Disney movie basically. And it's also got the Steven Spielberg factor behind it too. So I feel like Steven Spielberg. I think Steven Spielberg is basically just like an automatic nomination for whatever he puts out, if it's like a more dramatic movie.
I guess. Though I feel like, you know, since it's kind of like it's just a remake. There's no twist. I think it's pretty much by the book story.
I think they switched around like the like placement of some of the songs and changed the context of some of the songs and stuff, but. Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same, mostly the same as like the original one. So I think it's going to be on Disney Plus, I think, and Hulu, or is it? I can't remember if it's HBO Max and Disney Plus or Hulu and Disney Plus. But it's going to be streaming like on like March 2nd, I think, or something. So you can catch it before the Oscars if you want to see it, if you haven't seen it in theaters. I definitely want to try seeing Nightmare Alley. I haven't seen Nightmare Alley yet, but that came on HBO Max and I think Hulu like last week. I definitely want to watch that before the Oscars.
What's your thoughts about The Power of the Dog?
I haven't seen it yet. Have you seen it?
Nope. But like it's such a drama piece based on the actors, that like the marketing was just, this actor's in it, what does he do, he's just in it, you know. They're focusing on like Benedict Cumberbatch. It's like, he's in it, well, what does he do, he's just in it.
Yeah,
I don't know what the plot is.
It's a western, And it's like, I think it's, I forget if like Jesse Plemons is like his brother or something, or like, it's like, they basically like, it's like his like estranged family comes and like lives on it, like who, like it comes to like live on his ranch, and then, but he's like a giant asshole.
And so I'm looking like, at it, it's like, it's called a Western psychological drama.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not really action. It's just the people talking and then just kind of working through emotions. And I'm not sure if there's like mischief and betrayal, more like everyone's got like a bag of emotions that they all lay on each other.
Yeah.
That's, I'm like, that's the description I'm reading of everything. I'm like, yeah, it's like everyone in this farm is all sorts of like dramatically tensed.
Mm-hmm. And it is Power the Dog is the, like, I guess the front runner, or like, at least it has the most nominations. It has 12 nominations from the Oscars.
All right, that makes sense. Questions do you do well for Oscar bait?
Yeah. But yeah, I think the only one I've seen is Dune so far. I'll probably, yeah, and definitely gonna try to watch Nightmare Alley. I know you saw Don't Look Up, Chris, right? So
I did.
Yeah.
And it's not quite Oscar worthy, I think, in my opinion. It's very like, it's funny. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, the humor is good, but then they kind of beat you over the head with this like message of lying media. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is distracting, and the movie is like really long, like it's 2.5 hours, but it feels like 4. And let me tell you, it's not like a great 1-2, like, okay, I'll watch this movie and then like feel good about yourself. It's like,
yeah,
you're gonna need like like a
decompressed, yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna need to like watch a cartoon, maybe watch like a nice classic childhood favorite movie at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like you get emotionally invested, and then it's kind of, this message is sort of like, not to spoil much, but it's like a, what matters, like even if you die, like what really matters is like the short time we have than trying to prolong nothing, I guess. Yeah, it's a dark comedy of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can see why it's Oscar worthy on the story, but for performances, it's weird. It's all over the place.
I think the Academy just seems like they're a fan of like Adam McKay's stuff too. Like all of his stuff gets nominated. Like Vice got nominated, Big Short got nominated. Like all of his like recent stuff has been nominated. So.
Yeah, Big Short, to me, I think I like the Big Short the most, only because it's got like the message is clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very like, it knows how to take a break and not to add any kind of craziness. But Don't Look Up tries to like ramp at each section, each part of the movie, and it gets kind of like ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the point, is that like we're heading towards that direction as a society, where like a few years from now, like that's just gonna be normal.
So, best director. So we have Kenneth Branagh for Belfast. We have Ryosuke Hamaguchi for Drive My Car. We got Paul Thomas Anderson for Licorice Pizza. We got Jane Campion for Power of the Dog. And we have Steven Spielberg for West Side Story.
I feel like I need to see Licorice Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I keep hearing it. I don't, the plot is just like, they don't talk about the plot. Like, in all the ads I see, they never talk about the plot.
I don't really think there is much of a plot. It's just sort of this, like, meandering, just, like, hang out with these characters for however long it, like, the summer. It's, like, a summer of whatever, like, the 70s or whatever it takes place in.
Yeah, but isn't the story about, like, the guy who eventually becomes Barbara Streisand's, like, hairdresser?
Well, I know, like, Bradley Cooper's character is, like, dating Barbara Streisand in the movie. It's like, a whole scene. Yeah.
Maybe that's who. You know what I mean? Just, like, that's what I'm, like...
Because the only clip I've really seen is, like, the one where, like, it's, like, he's just, like, do you know who I'm dating? Barbara Streisand. And, like, the other, like, the main kid's just, like, Streisand? And he's like, no, Streisand. Like, it's just like back and forth, like them trying, like Bradley Cooper trying to like correct his like pronunciation.
Again, I thought that story was like, I that's the thing. I don't know what the plot is. It seems like these kids are hanging out and trying to. It's a coming of age tale, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get it, but it's just like, oh, so it's like a 15-year-old trying to impress a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
That's the point of the movie?
I guess so, yeah.
Oh, man. All right.
I think the biggest, like, kind of snub or, like, surprise for Best Director is that Denis Villeneuve was not nominated for Dune.
Hmm.
Like, a lot of people think that, Rasuki Hamaguchi, who was, like, the surprise, kind of, like, a big surprise, like, no one expected him to be nominated for Best Director. But, like, yeah, Drive My Car is, like, shockingly, like, strong for, like, Oscar nominations. Which it's like a 3-hour long Japanese film about like this guy, a guy who's like trying to, I think he's like his like wife died or something, but then he's also trying to like put on like a play, and it's like, so it's like, and it's like, just like this like very long drama.
But is there actually like a driving part or?
No? I think that's part of, I think it's part of the thing where he's just kind of like. He's like it's this director in Japan, but then he's also like, so he's trying to put on this like play, but he's also kind of just like driving around Japan, like kind of like trying to like deal with his grief about his wife dying and stuff.
Okay, I can see why it's like a very heartfelt story. It's kind of like The Green Book, but no one's playing music.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like that one's pretty much guaranteed to win like the best international Oscar, and then it's not. It could, I don't know. Like it's there's not really any like a super like clear front runner, but it could be like a like Parasite level of like, oh, like it sweeps like all the like, categories and wins best picture like Parasite did.
Okay.
But yeah, Denis Villeneuve is just like, I mean, the visual direct, like the, all the aspects of Dune are just like, it's like, are like so well, like realized and stuff. It's, I mean, unless they're waiting for like a, like when Dune Part 2 comes out, and if it lives up to like Part 1, then they'll be like, oh, okay, here you go.
Sure, well, the King style. This movie, like, all it does, I think it sets up the world and the like extraordinary fantastical sci-fi elements, but yeah. Then they just kind of introduce it. They don't really explore it more.
Yeah,
because well, just like they don't want to cram so much movie in like this movie.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder. Like, we'll wait for Part 2, Denny, and then if you deliver, then we'll give you some Oscars. But moving on. So best actor, we have Javier Bardem for Being the Ricardos. Benedict Cumberbatch for The Power of the Dog, Andrew Garfield for Tick, Tick, Boom, Will Smith for King Richard, and Denzel Washington for The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Right. It's kind of interesting. It's like, they're all dramas in a weird way, but...
I mean, everything in the Oscars is drama.
Yeah, it just, there's no, like, best comedy... like category for Oscars, is it?
That's like Golden Globes, but the Golden Globes have been like canceled and shunned now, so no one cares about them.
I just want something to laugh at, like all those things you can't really like. You can kind of giggle at like Tick, Tick, Boom for just some of the frantic
MTV
energy.
MTV Movie Awards, Chris. That's what you're looking for.
That's what I'm looking for, like best kiss and like,
yeah,
awesome like. Use of underwear.
Coolest dude. Coolest dude, sponsored by Mountain Dew.
New face, sponsored by Axe. So you're like, yeah, new face, yeah, of comedy.
Yeah. Best actress, we have Jessica Chastain for The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Olivia Colman for The Lost Daughter, Penelope Cruz for Parallel Mothers, Nicole Kidman for Being the Ricardos, and Kristen Stewart for Spencer.
I heard Kristen's like surprised Kristen Stewart got on that list.
Yeah, well, I guess the thing with her is like she didn't get really any nominations or win any of the like because there's a lot of like there's like the Screen Actors Guild and the Producers Guild and Directors Guild, all these like guilds in Hollywood that, like give their own awards out. And Kristen Stewart didn't really get anything from those. So everyone's just like, oh, she's done. She's not gonna get an Oscar nomination. And then she did. So it's like, all right. So that was kind of like I guess that was the surprise about it. It's like. Everyone like a lot of like people like predicting Oscar stuff like kind of wrote her off because she didn't win a lot of like the other like these like smaller guild awards and then now she's nominated again. So so best actor or best supporting actor. So we have Ciarán Hinds for Belfast, Troy Kotsur for Coda, Jesse Plemons for The Power of the Dog, J.K. Simmons for Being the Ricardos, and Cody Smith McPhee for The Power of the Dog. Which I wonder if those two are going to cancel each other out. Jesse Plemons and Cody McPhee for Power of the Dog. It's always probably like two people from the same movie are nominated in the same category.
Yeah, just like, which one do you want to win in this death match?
Yeah. And then Best Supporting Actress, we have Jessie Buckley for The Lost Daughter, Ariana DeBose for West Side Story, Judi Dench for Belfast, Kirsten Dunst for The Power of the Dog, and Anjanou Ellis for King Richard. So yeah, so another Power of the Dog, that's another Power of the Dog one.
All right. I mean, The Power of the Dog is... pretty interesting. I mean, I'm like, I just like read what the synopsis is, and like now I understand what the movie's about. I'm like, okay.
It's on Netflix. I mean, yeah,
that makes a lot more sense.
Maybe try to watch it before Oscars happen. So just jumping down to a couple other awards. Best Animated Feature. So we have Encanto, obviously. Flea, Luca, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, and Raya and the Last Dragon.
I guess that's the comedy, just because it's animated.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is Encanto's to lose, just because everyone like fucking loves Encanto.
Well, okay, Encanto is good music. The story is still bonkers, and I still can't figure out like who the villain was added to be, because it's like there's supposed to be like no villain, but then story doesn't make sense without a villain. I feel like. The music was good, but then they just did not know what to do with the overall structure. And they wanted to be, like, very family-friendly, but then the stakes are kind of crazy. And I feel like you got to see it before, like, we talk more about it, but...
Yeah.
It's surprising, like, we don't talk about Bruno. Like, I thought it was, like, catchy when I heard it back in, like, December. Holy shit, did it, like, it became radio sensation.
Well, I was going to jump to that category. Like, so best original song, apparently Disney did not think We Don't Talk About Bruno was going to be as popular as it was. They just did not see that coming at all because they didn't submit it as one of the songs. Because, like, so best original song, there's Be Alive from King Richard, Dos Arigitas from Encanto. So that's the song that came from Encanto. Down to Joy for Belfast, No Time to Die from No Time to Die, and
that like a year. I feel like that was like a while ago when they announced that song.
Which one, No Time to Die?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like April. It was like 2020, I think, because they were like, I think they were still because they were getting ready for like the big like premiere when COVID was just like ramping up, and so they released like the song of like here's the song. It's gonna be you'll hear it in like a month or two when the movie's out. But it came out last year. The actual movie came out last year. We heard No Time to Die for like 2 years before it came out. But and then Somehow You Do from Four Good Days is the other original song. Yes, I wonder if that's gonna bite them if Disney because they're like literally the most popular song in the world right now is not nominated for best original song. And then the other category we always talk about, just because it's like the best movies that we've actually we've all seen and know things about, is the best visual effects category, because that's where Marvel is, that's where like all the other movies are. So best visual effects this year is Dune, Free Guy, No Time to Die, Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, and Spider-Man No Way Home. Which No Time to Die is a very bizarre, like I'm sure it had visual effects in it, but like best visual effects, like I know I saw some people saying like where was like Godzilla versus Kong or something for that instead of No Time to Die, like I'm sure there's like a lot of like background CG stuff going on in No Time to Die, but like compared to like making like fucking Godzilla or something, like. All the rest of them were like, yeah, I get why they're not making visual effects, but like, yeah, No Time to Die is just bizarre.
I guess just like they want to just throw Bond in there one more time like that.
Yeah, but I mean, there's got to be like another category, another like technical category you could throw it in. I mean, it's got to be Dune, right? I mean, there's no way Dune loses this category.
That makes sense. It's like set in that world, and it's like there are way more sci-fi themes than No Way Home.
And it's everything in Dune is just so distinct and like well realized, and like the scale of it is insane. So, like the orthocopters, like all the like the suits and like the personal shields visuals and like all the ships and. Yeah, I would be absolutely shocked if Dune did not win Best Visual Effects. But so that's like you check out all the rest of the category. The list is up on the site. You can go check out all the other categories. But yeah, March 27th we'll be back. So we'll be back on whatever the Friday is after the Oscars, and we'll talk about who won. So moving on, we got a bunch of trailers this week, some big trailers to talk about. I don't know if it's because of the Super Bowl. I know next week we'll probably talk about the first Lord of the Rings I think the Power of the Rings is the name of the Amazon show. It's getting its first trailer during the Super Bowl. And I think there's some other possibly some other big trailers debuting during the Super Bowl as well. But we'll kick things off with, we got the first trailer for Jurassic World Dominion, which is coming out in June this summer. And I don't remember them like marketing this until like the trailer came out today, but like they're calling it the epic conclusion to the Jurassic era. So does that mean like they're like done with Jurassic movies, like, or it's gonna be a reboot, or like?
Yeah, that's why I think maybe they're done with the Jurassic
World says park, and then
and then maybe the next one they'll finally get to that like mutant dinosaur movie that they kind of thought about.
Yeah,
I still can't forget that. I'm like, it's so stupid it works for me.
Extreme dinosaurs, let's forget. But it's we're picking up 4 years from the end of Fallen Kingdom, where if you recall, they let Owen and Claire let a bunch of dinosaurs loose along with like Maisie, who was a genetically modified human, who was a clone of a human, which was just such an like insane, like universe shattering idea that are just like, oh, all right, we clone humans now too. All right, that's fine.
Like, no one can really die. We can just bring them back.
Yeah. But there was a, you know, the black market dinosaur auction. They let all the dinosaurs loose. So now there's dinosaurs running amok across the entire planet.
Such a bad idea to just let them go.
Yeah. And now it seems like finally 4 years later, like I guess people are just deciding like, hey, maybe we should try to round up these dinosaurs again, because they're killing people and also like causing like massive like ecosystem disruptions and like destroying the planet and stuff. So
yeah, it's like they are not unnatural by this new like standard.
I'm sure they're probably totally disrupting like the food chain and like the environment and like just killing people like all over the place because that's what they do. So, which yeah, and it's not clear from the trailer. I don't know if this is like a task force being assembled or just like it's just like everyone just decided like the main characters of all the movies decided like, all right, we should probably go round up these dinosaurs. But like, so but Owen and Claire get dragged back in, but then also the original trio. Ian Malcolm, Alan Grant, Ellie Sattler are all back, and they're also joining in this like quest to like round up dinosaurs around the world. And it definitely seems like that like unlike the like Ian Malcolm cameo from Fallen Kingdom, where it was like literally like a scene. It seems like they're definitely gonna be in this one for like most of the movie, hopefully. Like they're like definitely like a part of like whatever this task force or team or whatever it's going.
I don't think it's an official task force. I think it's just a group of like people that are scrounging on resources to try to kind of make a new, like a Jurassic Sanctuary, maybe.
Yeah. I don't. There's a shot of like some sort of new facility, which I don't. It's not clear what that is. Are they bringing everyone, all the dinosaurs to that facility to like keep them there as like a new, yeah, a new park or a new like. Containment sanctuary. Area or something. Yeah,
I think it's not okay in the sense of like now that dinosaur creatures are running around, like you don't want them to just be something in a natural like in the environment anymore because don't need apex predators running around.
Yeah, I can't remember in Fallen Kingdom because I know like James Cromwell was like talking about like actually like building a sanctuary, but then like his like lawyer or like whoever it was that was like running the black market auction, like I don't know if he like was lying to him and never built the sanctuary or like it was built, like maybe that's what that facility is that we see in the trailer. It's like
how
that,
much
like,
money did this guy have where he's able to just genetically make things and then build a secret facility in South America?
He was like John Hammond's partner, so like James Cromwell was like John Hammond's partner we never heard about until.
Yeah. I keep forgetting that.
Yeah. And apparently BD Wong is still running around too, like making like even more. Like he might be making more like horrible genetic monsters. And he it looks like he like genetically modified himself to like grow like luxurious hair.
Yep, that was weird. I was like, oh, that like BD Wong's real hair? What's going on in this show?
I've been growing it out for since Fallen Kingdom.
Well, in Fallen Kingdom, he doesn't really do much either, right? No. He just kind of, oh, I made these monsters. All right, time to cut my money. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe they'll bring back Vincent D'Onofrio or something.
Well, he got eaten by raptors, so.
He can get cloned.
They cloned him, yeah. That's the thing. Like, yeah, it's like literally, like, no one can, like, if anyone dies, just like, well, just clone him, it's fine. We just grab some blood.
Back
like,
a whole yeah. Give me a CGI Muldoon.
Oh my god, yeah. But it looks like we're getting like globetrotting dinosaur. A lot of it looks like it's like freaking like Mission Impossible or something. It's just like I'm expecting like Tom Cruise like drive by on a motorcycle to go in the opposite direction. Like just like so much like Mission Impossible style, like running across roofs and motorcycles and. There's like a bunch of new dinosaurs and like there's like a scientifically accurate like looks like a scientifically accurate like velociraptor that has like feathers and stuff.
Right, it's like actually like real.
Yeah.
Like Jurassic era raptor, which I appreciate. Finally seeing this weird. I mean, it goes against everything I grew up as a kid about raptors, but It's cool to see it more scientifically accurate. I guess the giant chicken bird monster.
Yeah. And Dilophosaurus is back, which is fun. The spitter from the original movie. We haven't seen them since the original Jurassic Park.
We haven't seen them at all.
There was a hologram in Jurassic World in like the visitor center, but that like they weren't in like they were. They haven't been like physically in like a movie since the first one. And yeah, then like some cool like Western shot, like it's like they're like rounding up like Parasaurolophus and like Western cowboy style and like are they ranching them or just like trying to round them up or is there a dinosaur ranch now?
Yeah, someone's like, are you allowed to harness them or are they like protected from the wildlife? I it's just like
yeah.
what do you do with these wild creatures that are like either eating all the resources or eating people? Also, why are they bringing these dinosaurs to like Europe?
Like, I guess they somehow just spread. Like, I don't know, they get, like, which I understand, like the Mosasaurus or whatever, like, is, like, in the ocean. He can just go wherever he wants. But, like, how did, like, raptors get to, like Spain or wherever the hell they are?
There's a lot of questions about
that. Because they got unleashed in, like, the Pacific Northwest or something. In Fallen Kingdom, so. But yeah, I guess we'll find out June 10th in theaters, and I guess we'll see what they mean by the epic conclusion. Like if people like characters are gonna die or like it's gonna like wrap up everything, and then we're gonna like if they're gonna wrap everything up, I don't know what the hell they're gonna do, because they're not gonna stop making Jurassic Park / World movies, like. Unless like Camp Cretaceous is just their thing now. Like we're just focusing on Camp Cretaceous on Netflix. That's our only Jurassic Park thing now. Which I've not seen. I've not seen any of that. Have you seen any of that, Chris?
Which one? Oh, the CG.
Camp Cretaceous.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Haven't seen it.
I think I've heard pretty good things about it. So I guess it's like apparently it's better than like the Fast and Furious CG show. Spy Racer, whatever that is, but.
Anyway. Yeah, it's just weird that it's like it's just like no one gets really eaten in that the Jurassic Kid thing.
No,
I think it's more like they're just like running around in the park.
Oh, I twisted my ankle. Oh no.
Yeah. Bug bites.
Yeah.
I'm surprised there's not like lesson of the day at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm.
So, other trailers, we got the first trailer for The Adam Project, which is going to be a big Netflix movie coming next month on March 11th. And it's basically, it's the team that brought you Free Guy last year are all back. So Ryan Reynolds is starring and Sean Levy is directing. And basically the premise is Ryan Reynolds is a like time traveling fighter pilot from the future who comes back to 2022 and kind of teams up, like crash lands in his old, like his like, behind his old house, and his younger self finds him, and then they basically team up to do something. Because like Ryan Reynolds, older, like adult Ryan Reynolds is back to like do something. He's on a mission to like do something to like protect the future or do something to like save the future or something that requires him to be in the past and change something. Or so. Which my prediction is that his father, who's played by Mark Ruffalo, creates time travel, I think, and then. Maybe like yeah, like it's that turned out to be bad, so they have to stop him or something from making time travel.
Or maybe that kind of makes sense, where it's like the future is more fucked up with this time travel machine, so it's the Back to the Future principle.
I don't know if they go like this dark, but I wonder if like the mission is like you have to kill your father because he creates time travel, and then that's why his younger self is like, oh man, my dad's dead, but then you find out like oh his like older self killed his dad. That'd be like pretty dark for like the like a Sean Levy like Ryan Reynolds team up.
I could see it happen in a more sacrificial way, not just like, well, I have to murder our own father. Or
yeah.
Hear me out, Futurama. He has to become his father.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a line where like Ryan Reynolds is like, we got to put the genie back in the box. So like. It seems like the implication is that time travel has caused horrible things to happen, so he's using time travel to, like, go back and stop it from ever happening.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. I didn't think about it. I thought it was more like, we need to go back and protect the father.
Mm-hmm.
But if he kills him, it prevents the technology from spreading.
If his father, like, that wasn't even in the trailer, we're just guessing that was in
the
trailer.
I know, yeah, but that's the reason why he's back and do all the things he's doing.
It seems, Mark Ruffalo seems like a, like, I invented time travel kind of guy, so.
Yeah, the father seems like he's distant from his kid in the beginning.
I think he's, like, dead or something, because it's like, Jennifer Garner's like, oh, I miss him too, or whatever, so.
I thought, like, I was spacing out in certain sections, but I was like, oh, maybe he's just at work a lot. But then they go back even further, I guess. Like, that's why, to see Mark Ruffalo. So he died no matter what. Maybe because he died.
Yeah.
Like, so maybe they're trying to stop that.
Yeah.
They're trying to do, like, a frequency. It's basically frequency.
And it definitely looks like there's, like, some sort of, like, malevolent force trying to, like, robots or some sort of, like, people are also coming back in the future trying to stop them that they have to fight. And then, like, Zoe Saldana shows up from the future as well. She's, like, helping them, like, fight whatever these evil things are. But, yeah, I mean, it looks pretty fun. Looks like, you know, Ryan Reynolds and time travel and... I mean, Free Guy was fun, so if it's, like, somewhat as good as that movie, then this will be good. And Ryan Reynolds is doubling down on Netflix. Like, Red Notice last year, this year, two Red Notice sequels coming up. Like, he's all in.
Doubling down.
So, last trailer to talk about this week is that we got the first trailer for the Firestarter reboot or remake that's coming from Blumhouse. So, you know, Firestarter, Stephen King novel turned into the, it was an 80s movie. Drew Barrymore starred in it as Charlie, who was like this young girl who had like pyrokinetic power. She could like create and control fire. And yeah, same premise of this one. So there's a young girl named Charlie who's played by Ryan Kira Armstrong this time, and her parents are Zac Efron and Sydney Lemon, and they're trying to like hide her from the government because the government must like take her to, and like use her like trade her to be a weapon for them. And yeah, and then whenever she gets angry or upset or something, she like basically like she can like cause like the temperature to start rising around the area around her and like cause fires, cause like things like explode because of the heat.
Yeah, that's really crazy to think where it's just like, oh, I think like when Firestarter a kid, which was just a pissed off little girl, right?
Yeah.
And then when they did was it just one Firestarter series or was it just, I feel like they did another version.
I feel like there probably was some sort of horrible like Firestarter sequel or something. There's a mini series in 2002. So the original one was 84, and then there's a sci-fi made a mini series called Firestarter Rekindled, and now we got the remake. Oh, the original one was also directed by Mark L. Lester, who directed Commando among other movies. So
We gotta go back and see the original to see where we can find the influences.
And our class of 1999 that we watched last year.
Okay. I feel like, I think you did all that then class of 1999, and then just kind of took a break.
he did class of 84, Firestarter, Commando, class of 1999. Showdown in Little Tokyo, Extreme Justice.
All right.
But yeah, I mean this new one looks fine. It looks like nothing was like, oh man, this can be awesome, but like it looks like it could be just a solid like remake of Firestarter. I think the interesting thing is that John Carpenter is doing the music, so that should be hopefully at least pretty awesome. I think there was a thing where like he was going to direct the original movie, and then something happened where like it was, like there was like sort of like legal thing or something got something like happened and he didn't direct Firestarter. Now he's going back to do the music for this one.
I mean, I heard his musical career is, like, amazing now.
Oh, it's because the Thing did so horribly, Universal's like, no, John Carpenter, you're done. Like, we're not, you can't direct this anymore.
That's a shame. Like, The Thing definitely, it was just, like, too good for its time.
Yeah, and it also came out the same year as E.T.
Rough.
But it's new Firestarter is going to be opening May 13th. It's going to be in theaters. And also, if you have Peacock, it's going to be day and date on Peacock. So you can watch it there if you're paying for Peacock. And that's it for trailers this week. So let's jump into some other news. And we got some exciting Star Wars news. We know the release date for the upcoming Obi-Wan series. It's going to be at Disney Plus. So it's going to be it's going to drop. The first episodes are going to drop on May 25th this year. So fairly soon, a couple months away. But hopefully because it's soon now. Hopefully maybe we'll get like some sort of trailer soon so we can see what's going on with it. And they're saying it's going to be a limited series, so they're not, I don't think they're really planning on this to be like a multiple season show or anything.
I mean, you don't need that much since we kind of know the timeline. It's not like some weird, you know, drama where basically he goes around the galaxy. Pretty much, I think, just going to be on Tatooine.
Okay. Which, man, I hope, there's definitely going to be some sort of like flashbacks probably or something, because like Hayden Christensen is going to be back. So maybe we'll get some like Clone Wars era flashbacks or something.
That'd be
like,
kind of cool.
To change things up, just like to like, cause yeah, that was one of the flaws I would say of Book of Boba Fett is just like it was just all Tatooine. It kind of got a little bit boring, but
yeah, that's why I can't watch another series where just Tatooine again.
Yeah.
In fact, you just see like Boba Fett waving to like Obi-Wan in the distance, like okay.
Yeah. What is so important about Tatooine?
Well, it's the one that started it all, if you think about
it. It's important because of like the original movie, but in the universe of like the actual universe of Star Wars, like it's not that great.
There's so much other things you can see.
Yeah. It's a spaceport and they farm moisture. That's all they do. And then they
they blew milk.
Blue milk. And then they according to like Book of Boba Fett, they were running spice through there. Apparently, that's the other thing. But now they're not apparently anymore. But so I guess for like criminals, it's good because it's like out of the way. You can like do whatever the hell you want there, basically. But as far as like important like strategic importance or like political importance is not, there's like nothing going on there. But yeah, I guess we'll see how much. Yeah, we'll see. I'm sure a lot of Obi-Wan's gonna be set in Tatooine, but maybe he does leave to go secretly go to do some other stuff, or we'll get some flashbacks to like other things, the past, and see some other planets and stuff.
Yeah, I don't mind if it starts in Tatooine and ends in Tatooine. That makes more sense in the structure wise, but I just don't want, you know, Obi-Wan training with Tusken Raiders, trying to like establish a mob boss.
Oh man, yeah.
So much of that.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of other Hulu and Disney Plus stuff, so Futurama is coming back. It's going to be revived for a new season at Hulu. And it's going to debut next year. And pretty much everyone's back except for John DiMaggio, who I think last thing I saw is that they're still they're still like negotiating the deal or like trying to work out a deal with him. But as of right now, he's not coming back. And if he doesn't come back, they're going to recast Bender and have someone else do Bender's voice. So that'll be very bizarre and horrible. But
understandable, where it's like, okay, well, why does Bender sound this way? Voice chip, whatever.
They could do something like that, yeah.
Or he's, you know, some other robot. That sucked, but, I mean, if you want more Futurama, you can't get everyone on board. It's not like they need the Bender likeness.
But yeah,
it's a cool thing about cartoons, though. It sucks, but you kind of can replace people.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, everyone else is back. So Billy West, Casey Segal, Tress MacNeille, Marissa Marsh, Lauren Tom, Phil Lamar, David Herman, they're all back. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be 20 new episodes on Hulu. And then I think they're also going to, I think they might start in Hulu, but then when they'll also be, they'll be on Disney Plus as well, because I think Futurama is on Disney Plus right now, possibly. I think it's definitely on Hulu, because that, obviously that makes sense, because Hulu, like, for this new deal, like, it's, you can watch Futurama on Hulu, but yeah, I don't know if it's on, yeah, it's not Disney Plus, but I guess these new episodes, I don't know if they would put all the original episodes plus these new episodes of Disney Plus for this new deal, or, like, just new episodes, but apparently they will be on both places at a certain point. And yeah, I don't know, like the actual like final episode that aired in like 2013 was so good that where do you go from that ending? Like,
I like the ending. That's why I was like, I don't mind it being over.
Because it made it
seem like even if it's over, it still goes on in its own universe.
It's just like the whole series is just like an infinite loop. That's always like. You get to the end and it goes right back to the beginning again. So, are these before the loop starts, or like it's like, oh, that doesn't happen anymore. Like we're just new.
I think maybe it's like after a certain cycle, this one's like a different cycle, maybe.
Yeah.
Sort of like time loop movie theory.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm very apprehensive of like, just yeah, the ending was that for the last episode was like so perfect, and like it was just like a great ending for everybody, for all the characters and stuff. It was just like,
it was a good send off, and it's a good like message about things where it's like, you know, it's like even if it's over, it's never really over.
Mm-hmm.
It lives on in your heart and in meta universe.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, nope, JK, here's another arc.
Yeah. So I guess we'll find out next year what's going on with these, and hopefully maybe we'll find out soon if they work out a deal with John DiMaggio and have him come back, or if they're gonna.
I hope he comes back. He really,
yeah.
He's definitely top favorite character of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand if it's like they have to do something and they can't reach a deal. But I can't imagine how they can't reach a deal. Like he's also on Disenchanted.
He's doing Disenchanted. Like it seems like he's like. Not like fighting with Matt Groening or anything. Like,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. So, we also, for Disney Plus stuff, we also found out that there's going to be a Goosebumps live action series coming. Yeah, it's going to be a 10 episode Goosebumps series. It sounds like it's going to be similar. I don't think it's not going to be in the same universe or anything, but very similar to like the. Jack Black movie, where it's not gonna be an anthology like the original like Fox show, where it's like each episode's based on a certain Goosebumps book. It's gonna be like the premise of this new Disney Plus show is that like five high schoolers unleash supernatural forces in their town and must all work together to save it. So it sounds like the same premise of the Jack Black movie, where it's like these kids unleash like Goosebumps monsters on their town and to stop them.
Yeah, I feel like they're not trying the original story. They're doing for the meta angle.
Yeah, and Rob Letterman, who directed the Jack Black movie, is directing the first episode of this show, and he's also writing and executive producing. So, I mean, maybe it's part of whatever that like. Goosebumps cinematic universe or whatever they like. I didn't see the sequel. Did you see the second one, Chris?
No.
Okay. Haunted Halloween or whatever it's called. It's on Netflix. I just never watched it.
I just, when the first movie came out, we kind of called the surprise twist.
Oh man, that was so
and
weird.
Did they even acknowledge it in like the second movie? I think
the second one just like totally just like there was none of the characters from the first movie came back except for like Slappy. Jack Black still voiced Slappy, but like there was no like Jack Black as R.L. Stine character anymore. It was just another like random group of kids just like unleashed Goosebumps monsters on Halloween or something. I think is what the premise of the second one was. They find the books again or something, and then it's like unleash them. But yeah, I guess we'll find out what's going on with this Disney Plus show. I wonder. I mean, you gotta assume, like, I mean, Slappy is like the most recognized character. You gotta assume like he's gonna be in there. I wonder if like if it is related to like the movies. I wonder if it's like Jack Black would come back for voicing Slappy, or they would just get some other like a sound like person.
Yeah.
I want to see Curly the Skeleton like and actually like be like actual character. Like, he was just, like, the mascot but he was, like, never in, like, any stories, right? He was, just, like, in, like, the fan club and stuff, but, like, I would like to see him, like, just, like, as an actual character or something.
It was weird, yeah. He had a mohawk?
Yeah, he had, like, a purple mohawk, and he wore, like cool, like, 90s glasses and stuff. Yeah, and yeah, he was like the face of the franchise, and then like kind of Slappy kind of took over everything. But yeah, so they'll be on Disney Plus sometime in the near future here. I assume probably whatever year it's coming out. I don't think it's coming out this year, but like whatever year it's coming out, it'll probably be like an October release, just get out there for Halloween time. And then we also found out this week that Russell Crowe has joined the Kraven the Hunter movie. That's apparently still happening. So yeah, Aaron Taylor Johnson was like cast like a while ago to play Kraven, and then that was kind of the last thing we heard about it. But now Russell Crowe's joining, and he's playing an undisclosed character. Although apparently like the movie's gonna really focus on like Kraven's family, so a lot of people are like guessing or kind of like speculating that like, maybe he's gonna be like Kraven's father or something.
That would make sense. I feel like Russell Crowe would be a burly ass like European hunter dude.
Yeah. And yeah, and that's gonna be January 13th next year. So yeah, hopefully we get some more info about this soon and see like. I would assume we would get a trailer sometime this year for this and see what the hell's going on. And see if it ties into Venom and Morbius and
Madame Web or whatever. Own universe.
I mean, that's what what is there like a weird official thing? It's like the Sony's Spider-Man universe or something, or like whatever universe of Spider-Man or something is what they call like their movies that like are not Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Just like, yeah. It's so stupid that they broke off and they can't figure out how to tie this all in.
Yeah, we gotta see how Morbius is this year. it's delayed again. It just never comes out, it's just always delayed. But last bit of news for this week is that we got some news about the Warner Brothers Discovery merger. So the federal government has approved the merger. So it doesn't break any sort of like monopoly laws. It's not a monopoly. It doesn't break any sort of like trade laws. So it is going through. It's approved to go through. And then I believe. The next bit of news is that March 11th, the Discovery shareholders are going to vote on whether they want the merger to go through or not. So if the Discovery shareholders say yes, we want the merge, then it will go through, and it will Warner Brothers and Discovery will be one company.
I mean, does that mean we get to see like real animals on like HBO shows? Like, what's the advantage besides owning those two different markets?
I mean, I think it's just like, well, I think the big thing is like AT&T, just wants to get out of the media industry. They're losing tons of money. They just want to get rid of Warner Bros. Completely and just be like done. We want to go back to being just like a telecoms company. We don't want anything to do with like entertainment anymore.
It was good while like the first year, and then it went downhill fast.
Yeah. And then if Discovery and Warner Bros. Merged, then they would have like this like. Super wide range of like they would have like you know like all the educational and like reality and like documentary stuff of Discovery. They would have all the script, like all the scripted entertainment of like Warner Brothers, so.
Okay, I could see sort of owning that market too.
I think that was like, it was AT&T want to sell, and Discovery kind of like is like, oh, this will be like a, we can like really like get this like huge catalog of content for like, our company. And then we definitely have to, like, we have to see like after, if they vote yes on this merger, we have to like definitely wait to hear about like if they're gonna do any sort of like bundle deal with Discovery Plus and HBO Max, or will they just like merge them into one super like streaming service where it's like Discovery Plus and HBO Max are just one thing, and it's you get everything from both services on the one app. So that's why I'm definitely interested in to see like what they're gonna do with like their apps, because they obviously right now each have their own app. But yeah, I would be like interested in like a, if they do a bundle, like a, you know, like the Disney Plus Hulu ESPN bundle. If you could like pay like one price for like a Warner, like HBO Max and Discovery Plus.
Yeah. I just, there's not too many things I watch on Discovery.
Well, I mean, it's also, I mean, Discovery Plus, Discovery is also like Food Network, History Channel, like about it's a bunch of other like networks.
But yeah, I watch more like Food Network shows. I only watch like clips, really.
But yeah, I think like, yeah, the pricing would definitely be like a factor too. Like if it's like, I mean, HBO Max is what, like 15 right now a month, or 20 a month? Yeah,
it's like 15, then 9 for like the commercial package one.
Yeah, and then Discovery Plus I think is like 5 a month right now or something, or like a. I thought it was fairly cheap, but like it might be maybe like 11 or something. But yeah, I mean, if they did some sort of like, it was like 25 for both or something, I would probably be in on that. Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, it's, yeah, Discovery Plus is $5 a month, or 7 for ads free.
That's not too bad, I guess. Mm-hmm.
But yes, yeah, so, yeah, we'll have more information after March 11th, after the Discovery shareholders vote on whether they want to go ahead or not, and then we'll see what happens after that. But yeah, definitely one of the biggest mergers for entertainment wise. Like that's like a huge chunk of like content between like all the Warner Bros. Stuff and all the Discovery stuff. So. So yeah, so that's it for news this week. So why don't you jump into show and tell? And Chris, you and I both saw Triple Threats for this month's commentary. It's gonna be going up in a couple weeks here on the site. But yeah, the 2019 action extravaganza with like a bunch of our favorite like VOD action stars. Yeah. Tiger Chen, you got Iko Uwe, you got Tony Jaa, you got Scott Atkins, you got Michael J. White, you got Michael Bisping.
Who's actually like a real like MMA fighter?
He's a real fighter, but like acting wise, he's not the best. He definitely is like he's the weak link of that movie by far. But yeah, it's if you're a fan of like any of those guys or like a couple of those guys, like it's just like a ton of fun just to like watch them like fight each other finally or again sometimes. Like I think a couple of them have been like in like movies before together, but like all of them together in one movie is like super cool. You get like a lot of like cool like VOD super fights of like Michael Jai White versus Iko Uwe, oh man, or like Scott, like Tony Jaa versus Scott Atkins.
Yeah, like it's cool. These are nice kung fu, like martial artists that like alone are like stars of different movies, like different like on demand movies. Mm-hmm. But together, it's like competent enough. The plot is paper thin, but it's just you don't really care for the plot. You just want to see people like kick ass.
Yeah, I think I think I got a review copy of this actually when it came out like in 2019 for the site. So there's a review from like the back, if you want to go back and like look for that. But like, I think in my review for the site, like the plot is basically just a skeleton like to like hang action sequences on. Like, yeah, it's just enough to like keep things moving, but like it's just like it is like not in depth or complicated or like interesting really. It's just like Scott Atkins and team want to kill like this person, and the other three guys are trying to like save her. That's it, pretty much.
Sort of two. The third guy is sort of, you know, Ico Uwe is just there.
Yeah, Ico is playing both sides. Like he's sort of the main character, even though it's like triple threat and supposed to be like all three guys are supposed to be like equally the main characters. But, he's the one that you first see, and then like he is like basically playing both sides, kind of like setting up all of this like. He basically sets up like the final conflict, and like he's like trying to get revenge on Scott Atkins and his team for killing his family in like a very blatant Predator ripoff jungle raid thing.
Oh yeah.
Even they like you put on our Instagram and Facebook a little bit like this week, earlier this week, but like there's even like a fake Shane Black ripoff guy basically. Like he's got the exact same glasses and like he's like the same hat and stuff. It's just like, yep. Such like it's just like, oh, it's the poor man Shane Black.
I mean, it's fun. Like it's a like what it's not like the whole movie is a Predator movie, so it's like this one weird jungle thing, and then yeah. It's just its own thing.
Well, there's a couple things where like, yeah, like the opening like big like Michael Chai White and his team like attacking this village is like very like Predator, and then there's a scene later like where like they're attacking like a police station that's like very like Terminator.
Yeah,
where there's just like they like murder like every cop in this country, like this fake country that they're in. Like I forget what the name of the country is, but like it's like almost every cop in the country is dead now.
They don't even give the cops sort of like an equal standing where the cops are competent. It's just like these people are like just blown away extras.
Yeah.
But I kind of did like Tony Jaa and Tiger Chan's like bro moments and stuff. They're kind of like a fun action duo.
Yeah, they're like roommates. They like get into like underground fights together. They take like weird black op mercenary jobs together. Like,
I mean, they should probably really vet those jobs better.
Yeah. Well, I guess they did get lied to. Like they thought they were like going into like rescue like civilian. Like it's like everyone they're trying to rescue are like being held by MI6 in like a black site. So they're like. They are probably dangerous criminals. I mean, it's like we're trying to figure out too. Like they're holding Scott Atkins in this black site, but also like other like
criminal, dangerous criminals,
like terrorists or criminals. And then like that's who like Tiger Chan and our 20 Jaa are like trying to free. So it's just like they just like let like a bunch of like terrorists loose.
Yeah, that's the part where we're like confused about that during our commentary. We're like, not every person in that jail was like a good person.
Yeah. Like everyone protecting it probably was. Like, Ico Uwe and his family seemed like they were, like, there for, like, just, like to, like, keep the people safe.
They were cleaning up the town that, like, this city, whatever, is, like, corrupted. The movie does a really bad job of introducing, like, the main crime boss. It's so, like, you don't even know her name.
Oh,
you don't know
like,
her motive. It's just, like, I want the city in terror. Okay.
Yeah, she wants to kill Selena Jade from Arrow, who is like a Chinese heiress who is gonna invest a bunch of money in this country, but then the other the crime boss who hires Scott Atkins wants and his team to kill her, like wants to kill her because then they'll keep like she'll be able to like keep her like control of crime because if the country's poor then they'll be able to like do their crime business better, but if they get like enough like money and like if it gets like gentrified then they're done, they won't be like do their crime stuff anymore. I guess it's like her reasoning or like her plot for wanting to kill like this heiress. But yeah, she's definitely like it's just like there definitely should have been like more of her, because like it's the glimpse you see is like she's like a like fucking like super villain. Like she's like got this like crazy feather dress. She's in like this like giant like penthouse skyscraper like last room like. Yeah, you get no information about anything.
Yeah, that's the one part I forgot that that's sort of like the story, because then it's brought at the beginning, supposed to be like, oh, maybe like some of this later, and then at the end, just by the way, this person got arrested. Who was this person? Oh, just a person.
Yeah. A random millionaire crime boss.
Who just, you know, it just trusted everything's going well. No backup plan, no anything, just we get the job done. Hey, we need more men. Don't care, get the job done.
Mm.
And yeah, I got, again, it's a fun action movie, nothing more. Like, yeah, it kind of knows exactly what it is.
It's totally worth watching to see like all these guys just kind of fight each other. That's the whole like selling point, and it delivers mostly on that. So if you just want to see like, if you came up with any sort of like combination of like Michael J. White, Scott Atkins, Taylor Chen, Iko Uwe, Tony Jaa, like you'll probably some version of that combination is gonna fight each other at some point in this movie. So. And yeah, so that'll be up in a couple weeks on the site. You can it's on Netflix. You can stream it and then watch along with the commentary when that goes up. So keep an eye on the site for that in the next couple weeks here. And then, did you see anything besides Triple Threat, Chris?
I saw the weird American version of Triple Threat, I guess, that came out this year.
Okay.
The 355.
Okay. Yep.
So the 355 does the plot a lot better than Triple Threat, in the sense of like you understand like the stakes, the villains, the, I guess the motivations, but it falls apart about just like why, and then even what the title is. So if you think about the Triple Threat analogy, there's at least three main martial artists, good guys, and that's like they're together the Triple Threat. The 355, there are five women all coming from different spy agencies that indirectly team up for most of the movie, then at the end team up together. But only literally the 355 only applies to like the CIA agent of the group, which is played by Jessica Chastain. And I try not to hate her in a spy movie ever since Aunt Ava or whatever the movie was.
Ava, yeah.
Oh my god, I hate that movie. but yeah, she plays a CIA agent who is teamed up with Sebastian Stan to recover a microchip that is able to hack like anything in the world.
So it's the what was the thing from Fast and Furious? It wasn't God's Eye, because that was like the surveillance thing. There was like the one from F9 last year it will hack anything.
Yeah, but isn't that with combination of the God's Eye, like it could do things and stuff?
Project Ares, that was what the best F9 thing. It could hack any controlled system in the world.
Yeah, essentially that's what this is too. It's yeah. Okay. So the movie makes a big deal explaining that like the creator who made this and how the like this Colombian drug lord gets it is like, oh, they threw this really quick like intro to it, where a Colombian drug lord got his hands on it, was able to give it to his Colombian programmer, and then they were going to sell it to a Russian arms dealer guy, black marketer guy, so he can do something else. But then they are raided by the Colombian, their version of the CIA, like, raids their compound. And then the one guy surviving from the Colombian CIA, like, takes the chip and tries to sell it for the highest bidder. But because it's such a hot item, like, everyone's fighting for it. So it's, like, the German investigation army, The German like special police, secret police thing. Americans, the Chinese agency, and then really not really the British. It's just more like an ex MI6 agent joins Jessica Chastain on her mission because they're friends. Mm-hmm. So that, and then what's her name? It's played by the actress from Black Panther.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah, she's the MI6 agent. Lupita Nyong'o is just like she's the techie of the group. She is a like a retired MI6 agent who knows computers and knows the need for cybersecurity. But then she gets pulled out of retirement by Jessica Chastain as a favor to join her in a mission. Because the first mission goes wrong where Sebastian Stan is killed off. But, okay, you know, obviously something not about that isn't right. It's like, it's super, like, poor. It's poorly delivered that he's killed off. It's like such a, like, TV show, like, oh, he's dead. Like, oh, okay. Like, where's the body? Don't worry. Like, none of that is even questioned. So, yeah. So then it's up to, like, along the way, Jessica Chastain keeps bumping into Diana Kruger, the German agent. Like, they keep butting heads because, they're rival agencies at this point. And then, like, through their mission and trying to figure out tracking this chip, they kind of, like, get more involved in this underground network of, like, buyers that are trying to get this chip. So as they work their way up, I do enjoy that. Like, it's very good at understanding, like, how to track what's happening, because, like, it's such a high profile chip, everyone's hiding it, and then there's, like, you know, you don't know who to trust. Like, they kind of set it up that, like, you know, everyone's sort of corrupted at each agency level, so you don't know, like, you know, the Americans, like, what they're willing to do, what their goals are, or the Germans, or the Colombians. So the other thing is that Penelope Cruz is introduced early in the movie, but she's not a secret badass. Like, she's like a psychiatrist who is there to talk down from that surviving agent because he's trying to, like, get his money and leave. Like, he's just like, well, like, now that I have this, like, I'm not doing the right thing. Like, I'm trying to, like, get my fortune and also, like, escape because, like, I have this and they're going to kill me and my family. Like, anyone, like, the world's going to go nuts for this. And it's weird because, like, the obvious thing to do is to destroy it. Like, it's not hard to think where it's like, well, maybe we'll use it for our side and it would be good. It's like, it's kind of like the Infinity Stones, you know? It's like, it's too good for it to just be something that you own. Like, it has to be destroyed. So, The movie does a lot of, like, twists and turns, but if you've seen any kind of standard spy movie, you could see the twist coming, so it's very, like, linear. The action was pretty good. I do admit, the action is a saving grace. The, like, shootouts and the planning and stuff, like, they kind of set up things are pretty great. Like, the action shots make it seem like they understood the school of John Wicking things, where it's like, okay, you want to do cinematic gunshots. Like, this is impractical in real life, but it looks cool on camera. So they do have, like, a lot of fun gun action. However, there is this one scene in this movie that is so jarring. It comes out of, okay. So this is a scene where they are trying to protect, or they're trying to, like, track the microchip being traded off in, like, Turkey. And, like, in order to kind of defeat, like, an evil mercenary, like, kill team, they're, like, assassinating this kill team one by one from a distance, and they do it so goddamn quick. It's, like, a comedy almost, because they're just, like, it's, like, they're pulling out silencers and just killing these people, and it's just, like, again, that's not how guns work, but they're just, like, pew, 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 pew. It's just, like, how are you, like, pulling your gun out? Like, first of all, you're not even just, like, timed this correctly where you're worried about pulling out your gun and shooting these people and then, like, trying not to get caught. They're just kind of like, oh, yeah, there he is. I was like, pop, pop. Anyway, back to, like, walking. I'm like, what? Like, I don't know how to explain it, but like you have to see the scenes of that because it's like it should be more dramatic, but it's not. You know, trying to like quietly take out assassins from a distance, like not even from a distance, but like across a building or like, you know, meters away. It's like, oh, that guy's on the roof. Bam, bam, like shoot the guy. Okay, next target. Or it's like, oh, let's shoot this guy. Oh, perfectly fell in this hole. You know, like it's, or it's like, oh, we stabbed this dude and we threw him in a blanket. Like, it's so smooth, it becomes so jarring, you know? It's like the uncanny valley of killing, which I get, like...
There's, like, no tension or anything of, like, if they're going to get caught or anything, because they're, like, so perfect that they're...
Yeah, like... yeah, it's like, think John Wick 2, where Kama and John Wick had that, like, silent, like, shootout.
Yeah.
Where they're walking, trying to shoot each other in the subway, mm-hmm. and they're, like, missing, and they're just, like, pew-pew, and, like, no one's reacting. It's, like, stolen from that. Except... No, these people are murdering people, and it's, like, filmed in that, like, awkward, funny, like, oh, like, you know, how come no one's noticing this? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So they have a scene like that that comes out. It's just very, like, up until this point, it seemed really realistic, and then they have this, and I'm like, what? And then the movie goes back to normal. Then the movie's just back to, like, a spy thriller trying to track down who can they trust. But, yeah, I wrote some notes down, again, just because I just don't want to get too lost and not spoil so much. But, yeah, the MacGuffin thing that this, like, hack comes in, what do you think it comes in? Like, what, it's, like, it's such a powerful machine. It should be, like, this, like, you know, ultra secret container or like, a steel case or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It comes in, like, a shoebox, basically. And it's like, it doesn't quite make sense because it's like too big to be a USB too. It's like this big supercomputer chip, but it's like in the shittiest way you would want to like carry this. You know, I get like super powered thing, but it definitely looks like someone made this in their garage. Like there's no care into like making this box. And I guess that's the point is that it's so...
They should have went full like Fast and Furious and did like the big like just a big stupid like orb or something. Like,
it's, yeah, I thought it'd be something like that. It's not. It's really realistic in like what it is, but it's just a MacGuffin box. Like it doesn't exactly matter that it what it looks like. It just as long as it hacks. How does it hack? It just hacks. You know, they show you like a dumb like neural network representation of the AI and stuff, but then it's like all right, well. If you understand that it's this, then couldn't anyone make this like that? It's like almost they treat it like alien technology. Just like what? Like you know what it is. Like it's not like it's foreign, but I get it. So it's weird too. The movie treats Penelope Cruz as if she's not hot. It is bizarre. It's like. She plays a very, not like aggressive woman, but not super shy. But out of nowhere, her character just becomes like flustered. I get it. It's like, oh, you're in a very high tense spy thriller. It's not, you're not a field agent. She's more like just the like headquarters, like team psychologist for the Colombian government. So she's not used to like being in the field to do this job. But they make it seem like she doesn't know that she's hot. Or how to flirt, because at one point she has to like seduce this one character, like some other guy,
mm-hmm.
and it's like she's never learned how to seduce or like talk to men, and it's just bizarre, you know? Like, huh? I don't know. They treat her so that she's not like hot at all. I'm like, it's weird.
It sounds like. Do you ever see like NTSF SDSUV?
Yep.
Where like Rebecca Romijn is like the lab person just because she works in the lab they're just like ugh
right yeah
this dog
it's like, they don't treat her as like a hot girl they treat her as just like oh god look at this like ugly being so then the movie like because it's about like I think the trailers made it seem like it's this team of super women like working together
mm-hmm.
they don't work together like all five of them until the last like 15 minutes of the movie or so.
Yeah, so, said that sequel, baby. 3452, yeah, which will never happen. Weird. Like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like, that's what I was trying to figure out. I was like, is it just the 3-5-5? Maybe it's like three teams of fives. Maybe it's five teams of three. I don't know, but it's like, nope. At the end of the goddamn movie, Jessica Chastain just mentions about like, hey, do you remember the 3-5-5? Like, yeah. Yeah, the story about the George Washington's like secret spot, female spy. Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. Like, there's no like, that's me, or like, oh, maybe I'll take that agent name, whatever. It's just kind of like, hey, do you remember that? Yeah. Yeah, women can be deadly. Like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because I was saying, like, there's a scene from the trailer where, like, Chastain's like, we're the 3-5-5. And I was like, that's got to be, like, the last scene of the movie, because, like, then, because now it's like.
She doesn't even say we. It just makes, yeah. She just reminds someone that that's a thing. And so, like, okay. Okay, I don't want to get too spoiled, because I know it's like, you need to see it too, and it's like, then we can get like a full review, but it's so weirdly paced, because at the end, it's one of those abrupt stops, where just when things get good, it's kind of over, but then you're like, wait, that's the climax, isn't it? And then the movie has like an extra epilogue, which doesn't make any sense. It's like, here's the thing, like the bad guy gets away, sort of, the like, to the, at least the public knowledge, like he got away, uh-huh. And even into like what the world knows, he got away. Like some of the lives of these women are like ruined, because like they sacrifice a lot of their time and like family for this job, and then for some reason like the like evil bad guy knows about that. And then the, it's just, Jessica Chastain is just really bad at, like, trusting the people. Like, again, I'm not trying to spoil so much, but it just doesn't make any sense of, like, how corrupt the American side is, to the point where China has to step in and, like, be the better version. It's just, oh, yeah, like, you know. We've been watching out for everyone. It's like, what? It's like the surprise, like, China's the better of the five women. So, it's got some issues with, like, trying to do too much at once, and then sort of just not at all at the end. Because Jessica Chastain is the main character of the movie, but you kind of want equal footing for a lot of things, but they just don't. They really focus in on this like dumb romance plot that Jessica Chastain has with Sebastian Stan. And then it's like, they try to make it seem like, haha, we got you, viewer, because we killed off Sebastian Stan like 5 minutes in the movie, or 10 minutes into the movie. It's just like, no. No, you didn't, movie. Like, this can't be the way you're just showing me this. And then he gets kind of, and then here's another thing. Sebastian Stan, he's well used for what they put him in. But his character in the movie just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. He's like really good at his job, but for some dumb reason, he's like bad at his job. And then the main villain, who, like this whole time, the main villain has been this Russian guy who has been trying to get the microchip in his hands that he paid for in Colombia. It's like three times he has the chip secure before it's stolen again. That's the weird thing. It's like, you think, like, it's just, we need a race to grab this chip and then we have it, right? But no, like, the chip gets stolen and re-stolen, like at least three times in this movie. Like, they'll have it, then, like, someone will steal it, and they go find it again, and then someone steals it again. Like, that's why it's, like, weirdly paced like that. Like, you know, in Fast 9, the guy, Airy system is pretty much the bad guy has it, and the good guys try to like destroy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine this time in Fast 9, like 20 minutes in, the good guys have it, and then like 10 minutes later, the bad guys have it, then 20 minutes later again, the good guys have it, and then at the end, the bad guy has it? That's kind of what happens. So, Yeah, it's just like they need to clean it up and sort of if they do a sequel, like don't do this like stupidly long time to build the team of spies. Like it takes them a while to like for them to kind of work together. And then when they do, then it's like, now we're a team. And then it's like, well, I gotta go. I'll see you. I'll maybe see you in the sequel if it takes off. Which I don't know if it's going to. I heard like the box office records for this wasn't that great.
I think it's something better as like a premium video on demand thing. I think it's gonna be on like I think Paramount. I think it's a Paramount movie, so it's be Paramount Plus. I think if you have that, you can just watch it on there. I'll probably wait for it to come to my physical Netflix. I think it's out in like 2 weeks on DVD and Blu-ray. So, did you see anything else besides 355, Chris?
I burned through all of Jack Reacher.
Oh, the new Amazon show.
Yep. Yeah, I
haven't seen it yet, but I heard it was good.
It's pretty good. I enjoyed it because it was like. It was fun, but it gets kind of weird after a while. Like, Jack Reacher, he kind of acts autistic.
is he still, like, an expert in, like, literally everything?
He is, but his, like, his mannerism is, like, if you thought his, like, Tom Cruise was more, like, kind of like a know-it-all in the movies, the TV show version makes it seem like he's got like Asperger's almost.
Oh jeez.
Because he corrects a lot of people to the point of like weird. It's like, oh hey, like hey Jack, so what? You're standing in the rain, your shirt's getting wet. He goes, I don't mind. I like my. It's like wet shirts don't bother me. It's like, okay, you know what I mean? Like it's weird dialogue written that way that I'm like, that's weird. And it comes. It comes to a point where it's like after it's like every episode, there's always like one of those comments he'll make about something kind of weird. It's like, oh, Jack, like something tragic happened. He goes, Jack, I'm really sorry about what happened to you. It's like, you know, hey, if you want to talk about it, I don't talk. I just do. It's like dumb tough guy talk. And it's like very like spectrum-y words that I'm like, huh.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. Like sometimes when it's like, he doesn't have catchphrases, so because he doesn't use catchphrases, he just used kind of like smart aleck replies, but they're not smart. They're like weird observation replies. That's why I'm like, this doesn't sound as badass as it's coming across. That's most of my problem with it. Story-wise, it's pretty good. And for like a low-stakes TV show thing, it's like, it takes a while for the plot to develop, and they really kind of drag it out, so that way you can't really tell exactly what's going on up until a certain point in the show, and then it's like, okay, now we'll, like, handle the rest, and it fills you in on the plot, but...
Yeah, I think it's based on, the first Jack Reacher book ever, and then Lee Child's, like, first book, too, so it's like... Like Lee Child's first book was also the first like Jack Reacher novel, Killing Floor.
I mean, he is more aggressively like a hobo than Tom Cruise was, and he's like.
Well, I think he's literally like he's like the Incredible Hulk from like the Incredible Hulk TV show. Where he literally just wanders around the country and it's like, oh, I'm in this small town and there's a trouble going on. All right, I'll solve it.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then there's the thing where it's like he really doesn't like having material goods. Like he wears like donated clothes. He has like only cash money. He doesn't have a like ID or like a credit card. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a cell phone. He only carries like junk. Like he just carries small things and he doesn't need material goods. And then it's very like, oh, I also eat like. He's like a drunk frat boy. And that's the joke too, is that he's able to eat all this like garbage food and then he's just like fit as hell. And he's like super imposing that some people can recognize that, like, yeah, don't mess with this giant. And then other people are like, drunk teens are like, I'm going to fuck this guy up. Like, just your bare hands? Like,
yeah.
A lot of people want to fight him. It's so weird. And they really, like, Alan Richardson, like, he is, like, such incredible shape, even though I'm pretty sure it's, like, a little, you know, help. But if he isn't on that, he's just giant. I'm like, holy shit, he's three times the size from Blue Mountain State. Like, for example, he looks like Ralph from Ninja Turtles now. Like, he looks like a Ninja Turtle.
Mm-hmm.
He is just massive. Impressive. Because I think, like, in the Jack Reacher books, he's supposed to be, like, a mountain of a man.
Yeah. 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 Alan Richardson is basically, like, how Jack Reacher is described in the books.
And they do a good job of him being, like, very methodical with his plans. With his, it's like a MacGyver thing where it's like he doesn't need a lot. He gets the essentials. Like, he'll steal and grab whatever he needs for that moment. So it's not like it's like he has to go with, like, a whole stock full of things and then not use it. Like, he's the, you know, every bit of the cow philosophy of preparedness. So that's cool. Like, when you watch it, you feel like you're kind of learning a little bit of, like, what it is to, like, survive in an urban environment. So it's got that great, like, survival man aspect to it. But then he's got, like, just again, like, how he spews, the delivery of it makes it sound like he's very, like, he's just, like, recalling, like, facts, you know, like, it's almost as if his eyes roll back and he's just, like, deep, like, photographic memory recalling things about random occurrences. And I'm like, what? That's why I give, like, at least I give the Tom Cruise part a little more credit, where it's like, there's a certain, like, Tom Cruise charm about his version of Jack Reacher that I guess isn't really the book version, but just more Tom Cruise's delivery. But this Jack Reacher is just, like, the deadpan, like, shoot a fact, no charm, no wit. It's just like, Jack, are you hungry? It's like, no, I don't need to eat that much. You know, it's like, what? It's just a lot of those. But action-wise, pretty good, you know? See it for the, like, come in for the action, stay for the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched that. That took, like, all week. I burned through that, like, in, like, a weekend. 8 episodes, I think. So yep. You'll get through it.
Anything else, or?
That's it.
All right. So I saw a couple things. Rick and Morty season 5 is finally available to stream, like HBO Max stuff. Like, I didn't get a chance to see it because I don't have access to, like, Cartoon Network or anything. So, and I assume it'll be like up much faster than it was. Like, it's literally been like,
it's been like a year.
Like, it, like, yeah, it and the last episode of season 5 aired on, like, September 5th last year. So yeah, it's been since like September. Now it's fine. So, like, what, 4 months, 5 months since. But now it's yeah, it's finally up on HBO Max. I think it's weird because I think all the stream services have, like, access to it. So, like, but it's like HBO Max, and then Hulu's gonna get it, like, in a couple weeks, and then, like, I think, like, Netflix is gonna get it eventually too. So I think whatever streaming service you're on, you'll eventually be able to watch it. But HBO Max is first. I still have 2 episodes to watch, but I've watched most of the season. Did you see any of season 5, Chris?
Here and there, like. I haven't seen it because I was kind of, like, late in watching it too, because I just didn't watch a lot of Adult Swim.
Yeah. It's
been trying to go to bed early.
Yeah. It's, man. Yeah. There's some fantastic episodes this season. Like, I think the first episode back is pretty fantastic because it's got, you meet, like, Rick's, like, nemesis, Mr. Nimbus, who's, like, this weird Aquaman kind of, or, like, Namor. He's, like, a Namor, yeah, like, a weird, like, pansexual Namor, who's, like, just because they, like, land in the ocean in Rick's spaceship, that's, like, that, like, violates the tree they had, so he's, like, so it's, like, oh, shit, we're in the ocean, Morty, we're in the ocean, Mr. Nimbus is coming. Morty's just, like, what? Mr. Nimbus. But then there's this whole, like, great, like, sci-fi, it's one of the great, Rick and Morty just comes up with these, like, sci-fi concepts that could be, like, entire shows or entire movies by themselves, but it's just, like, a throwaway thing in an episode. But basically,
it's sort of not fleshed out at all, one of those things.
Yeah, it's like Rick opens like a portal to like this other dimension where like time moves like faster than their dimension, and he just uses it, he's trying to use it just like age wine to like to make it better. But then there's this whole like subplot where like Morty keeps having to like go get wine, and like this like civilization on the other side is like keeps like evolving, and like Morty because Morty did something to like them to them thousands of years ago. Like he's like this like ancient evil demonic force. I guess like their entire society is built up to fight Morty whenever he shows up.
And that's very funny.
Yeah, and then there's another episode where it's basically like a parody of like Scarface or like other like kind of like crime like Goodfellas or something. But like it's all about like them. Like trying to like Rick is like becomes obsessed with like getting like these like Voltron style robots and having like other like Ricks from other dimensions and their families like bring their like Voltron robots over and like making like the ultimate like Voltron robot. But it's all like all the other Ricks are like once just straight up like a Scarface Rick, and there's like a Marlon Brando Godfather Rick, and there's like voiceover from Summer and Morty like Goodfellas style like describing what happened, and it basically becomes this like big like just like this like crime. It's basically like it's like the cocaine empire of Scarface, but like Voltron robots.
They just keep making Voltron robots?
They just keep like going to like other dimensions and then like finding like oh like this Rick and his family has a Voltron robot or like they have Voltron robots too, but like we'll have them join our like Voltron because it's like we have five Voltrons and we'll combine them into like these five Voltrons and we'll make an ultimate Voltron that will make like add like five more and five more and five more and five more and five more. So they just keep adding more like robots to, like this like giant Voltron. But then it also like it's like oh like the anime like the actual like anime characters that like they're stealing these robots from are like want them back, and they're like so then they like are trying to like kill everyone.
Okay.
And there's also like one of the other ones is like there's a Thanksgiving episode but it aired in like July. But it's like Rick and Morty accidentally like they actually like destroy like the Constitution. They're trying to do like a national treasure, like get the secret map off the back of the Constitution. But like Morty actually, like blows it up. So then like they're like now they're like wanted by the government. So then like Rick has this whole elaborate plan of like, well it's Thanksgiving, so I'll make myself a turkey and get like a turkey party for the president. But apparently this happens Rick does this all the time, like every year like he tries to get like a turkey pardon and like so he and the president just have this like escalating plans against each other
to pardon turkeys.
Yeah, which that's another great thing about this season is like there's been like a lot more like of a Keith David's president in it, and he's such a great character. Like his just like back and forth with Rick is like so awesome. And like Keith David,
I wouldn't expect that. I really wouldn't expect like Keith David to just have like this fun connection in Rick and Morty.
Keith David, he's just so in. Like he just gets it. Like he's just having like he thought he's having like so much fun doing it and stuff. Like it's great to have more of him in there. And a bunch of other great guys are too. Like Timothy Alphonse shows up in an episode, and Jim Gaffigan, and like Tom Kenny and Alison Brie and a bunch of other people. So yeah, definitely gonna watch the last episodes soon, and then I guess wait for season six, I guess, whenever that comes.
In 2 years, probably.
Yeah, and then it'll be like 5 months after that. It'll be on HBO Max. And then the other big TV thing is I saw the season finale of The Book of Boba Fett. I don't know if you saw that, Chris, or not.
Nah, I'm behind.
Did you see the episodes were that basically like Mandalorian season 3 episodes?
I've heard of it basically, but I'm trying to like just enjoy it this weekend.
Yeah,
because I was gonna do that, but then I got really into Jack Reacher and I was like, I'm just gonna finish this.
Yeah, this Book of Boba it's been such a weird like I don't I don't like if the fact that they had like so much like Mandalorian stuff in it, it's just like why is this not like Mandalorian season 3? Why is it like this weird like Book of Boba Fett side thing? Like, cuz like it's, I mean, the season, it's basically essential for like Mandalorian. Like if you don't watch this and then jump into season 3, like you're going to be like, well, why is this happening? Like, where did you get this? What happened here? Like, why is like if you don't, yeah, there's like so much like vital stuff picking up from like the end of Mandalorian season 2 in this that like it's just like that a bunch of people are probably not are gonna skip it and be like, wait, what? Wait, what's going on?
What's going on? Yeah, it's like, yeah. I feel like those are very important chapters from what I saw and like what's happening with the like Luke parts. I was like,
yeah,
what? Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. You're right. Like, it just seems like this seems to be in its own show. Why is it just here?
Yeah, it's not like a reaction to like people being like, oh, this is not work. Like they planned this out. Like they planned it to be this way. It's not like people weren't feeling like the first couple episodes of Book of Boba. They were just like, well, make Mandalorian episodes. We gotta make Mandalorian episodes. Like this is filmed like forever ago. It's not reactionary or anything. It's just a weird like three episodes in and then it's like, or like four episodes in and it's like, and now it's the Mandalorian. Like, this is what you really wanted. Like, it's like, this should have been like a, like, this should have just done season 3 of Mandalorian. This should have been like a 2 or 3 episode like arc of Mandalorian season 3 of like, oh, he finds out that Boba Fett needs help on Tatooine because he's trying to like be the new crime boss or whatever, so he goes and helps Boba Fett for like an episode or two. Like, that should have been like the extent of like the Boba Fett stuff. And it was weird, like the fact that like they spent so much time with like the Tusken Raider flashbacks and it amounted to like basically nothing. There's
nothing,
like,
yeah. And that was like, that part was weird. I thought maybe it'd be a secret reveal about like the lead woman thing. Nothing.
Yeah, they do all this stuff. They build up like all this. Yeah, he like bonded with the Tuskens. They learned all the customs. Like there's like the that like mysterious like his like warrior trainer guy. Yeah. The tree where he gets the gaffy stick and like, yeah, they like really built up like the like his like trainer that like trained him in the ways of the gaffy stick, and then it's just, then they're like, they're all dead. That's it. Like,
don't worry about him. I guess, but then it shows you that this whole time it's just been revenge.
But it's such a boring plot like thing. I was like, it's just, oh, they killed the people he cares about and now he's getting revenge. Like, it's just like, all right, that's like every single person ever in the history of like cinema. Like, every action hero in the history of like action.
They basically give him the Luke Skywalker like Aunt Maru and Uncle Owen like death thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess it's like kind of poetic because it happens to him.
Or he finally found, because he was always by himself or like he never like had like a quote unquote family except for Django, but then so like he found like this new family with like the Tuskens, and like they died, so now he's out for revenge.
Well, wasn't he like a leader of all these other like bounty hunters where it was like his other he made basically a new family?
Yeah, in the Clone Wars he was running around with like a bunch of like bounty hunters like Bosk and Aura Singh and like all these other people. I know. Yeah, it was just, yeah, the first couple of episodes were paced so weird. Like, it was just like, so like all the flashbacks that left, like, and then it was like just for basically nothing. Like the fact that they're all dead, like, just like, it's like, all right. If the reveal was like, oh, the Tuskens came back, like, we need help in this like war with like the Pike Syndicate or whatever, like, oh, I know who I can call, my Tusken family or whatever, like, and then they come and like help, like, then that would make sense for like why he had so many flashbacks, but it's just like, nope, they're dead and they're never coming back, and it was all like it was kind of pointless to even like spend any time with these people. Like, except just like, I guess you got to learn about like Tusken culture or something. and then episode 5 and 6 are like literally just like they're not Boba Fett episodes at all. It's Mandalorian episodes. So it's like his own, like Boba Fett's own show is hijacked by the Mandalorian, and they're like better than anything that's been happening in the previous 4 episodes. But I mean, I, like the last episode was good. Like it was like the, like there's a lot of cool action and stuff in it. So I mean, it was a, like it had a sound ending, but it's just like what was the point of this? Like really, like to have a whole like this like mixed bag of a season when its main purpose was, like, it seems to be just like set up things for Mandalorian season 3. Like that's like the only reason it exists. It seems like. And it should have just been Mandalorian season 3 to begin with, but whatever. there's still like mostly fun stuff in it, so.
And well, I mean, I feel like it's still enjoyable overall. I think just if the main point was the Book of Boba Fett, you should probably have more Boba Fett doing cool things besides him walking around and like beating people.
Oh, and then also like there's just like really just bizarre stuff too. Like the mods were just like they felt so out of place in like Star Wars, and like they're like weird like Fast and Furious bikes, and then like it's like they're like club kids on Tatooine that like turn themselves into robots and like
that like the Power Ranger squad of just like helpful people. They're like, we love you, boss.
That like quote unquote high speed chase in like I think it was like episode 3 or something. That was like one of the worst action scenes I've ever seen. Like it was so terrible. Like it felt so slow and like mistake. Yeah.
Like, it was just like, all right, just avoid like garbage and then didn't even leave the city. He was just driving around like circles.
Yeah, it was a slow speed chase through the city with like nothing. Like there was like crashing through like boosts and stuff, but it's like, oh man, this exciting chase. They're like on their like Vespas, like chasing this guy. They were acting like it was like so fast. And you just see them and like, it's like, they're not going fast. Like they're like acting like they're hunched down in their Vespa. They're like Vespa speeders, like going like, oh man, we're chasing this guy down. We're hunting him down through the city. It's like, it looks so terrible.
There's no like, now this is pod racing.
It's yeah.
Like, now this is something. This is just traffic.
And it's crazy too, because like literally like an episode before that, you had like the actual like awesome sequence where like they're like
the train robbers.
Boba Fett was like helping them like stop the train, and they had speeders in it. They were like there was definitely a sense of speed in that action sequence. So it's just like, what the hell happens? But yeah, so yeah, definitely a mixed bag, but like I think overall pretty good. Definitely not as good as like Mandalorian, but we did get Mandalorian stuff in it, so it's important to watch still. And then as far as movies, I got a review copy of Exorcist Vengeance, which is the latest movie from Robert Bronzi, the Eastern European reincarnation of Charles Bronson, who's been a bunch of Charles Bronson-esque movies. Like the last one he was in was Escape from Death Block 13, which I also got a review copy of last year. But this one is interesting because it's somewhat interesting because it's a horror movie. So it's like, it's basically like your closest, like if you ever want to like kind of get an idea of like what a Charles Bronson like horror movie would be, then like this is kind of it. Cause Robert Bronson still has like, he's still like in his, like, he's doing like his like, you know, like, like stoic, like Charles Bronson-esque performance in it. But he's like a priest battling demons. And it's also funny too, because like he has a fucking gun. So he's like this like gun-toting Catholic priest who's just like, well, if I can't exercise this demon, I'm gonna shoot it in the head. Like,
if the Bible fails, the gun works.
Yeah.
Like, does he use the gun, or does he just threaten the demon with it?
He uses the, like, he doesn't really use it like. I wish he was like going on shooting demons and like killing them, but that would have been like a much more interesting movie. But like he doesn't really use it that much. Like he uses it to kind of like I think he like shoots near the ear, like the person who's possessed ear, and then like kind of that like throws off the demon or something, because like the gunshot or something. But yeah, he's not like going around like death wishing like demons or anything, which you would like you would like the. You kind of hope for, like, that'd be like a much more like fun movie. But it does actually try to do, like, it tries to do, so it so it's it does a lot of like the like traditional kind of like Exorcist stuff where it's like, oh, this family in, well, it's in like England, and Robert Bronzy is this priest named Father Joseph who gets sent to the house of this like wealthy kind of family, and to like investigate because like the wealthy like matriarch of the family like killed herself, and then her housekeeper is like acting weird, so then the church is like, oh, go figure out if this housekeeper is like possessed by a demon and exorcise her if she is. So Bronzy goes to like the house and then like finds out like, oh yes, the housekeeper is possessed by a demon, and then it like, you know, does like typical exorcist stuff, like Bible passages and throws holy water on her and ties her to bed, and there's like, and she's like thrashing around and yelling and like taunting her to him and stuff. But then there's this other thing going on where it's like, it's almost like a like whodunit murder mystery where like there's like a outside like the demon, there's like a hooded person like going around murdering people.
I feel like that's like another movie.
Yeah, so like members of the family are like getting picked off one by one, but then it doesn't have the like cast size or like the execution
story
to like
build
it off. Because there's only like, it's Bronzy and there's like five people in his family, so like by the time like two people are dead, it's like there's only three people left. Like one of, like, it's like not really hard to figure out who you could probably predict who's gonna be like, who is logically gonna be the killer. Like it's not like Knives Out where it's like a half a dozen or a dozen people that could be the killer, and you know, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, they kind of go through the list to figure out who's like,
yeah,
it's like no, there's only four characters left.
Yeah, or like, yeah, we're down to like two characters. It's probably not gonna be Bronzy because he's the main character. So it's like, and yeah, and it's also like just like, it's, you're stuck in this house for like the entire time, and the house is like a very boring, there's not really anything interesting about the house. It's just like this like quaint English like countryside house. So it's like, it doesn't have like a personality or anything. There's no interesting rooms. There's no like, the only thing is, it has like a secret passage going from like one room to another room. That's like the only interesting thing about it.
Like it's so, just a hallway.
So yeah, but yes, yeah, so, and you're stuck in this kind of this boring house. I wish it was more of like, there's like that Denzel Washington movie like Fallen, where like a demon keeps like jumping between bodies and like murdering people.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was like more of that. Like it was like on the streets, and like Bronzy was like on the streets, like trying to like hunt down this demon, like and like death wishing people and stuff. Like it was more like that, like Charles Bronson style, where it's just like, I'm gonna hunt down this demon on the meat streets and like deal with thugs and stuff. And but he's dealing with this like kind of like, you know, this well snotty wealthy British family in their demonic possession. But
I mean, it's for like a straight to DVD movie. You recommend it?
I mean, it's not good.
Oh.
it's better than you think it would be. But it's definitely not good. If you're at all interested in just, yeah, the main reason to see it is just, like, if you want to see or experience kind of like what a Charles Bronson horror movie might have been. Because, like, obviously, like, Bronzy's our closest thing to, like, a Charles Bronson right now. Because he, like, literally looks exactly like him and acts like him. Except for, like, his, like, very thick accents. But, yeah. I mean, it's definitely better than, like, the schlock from, like, The Asylum or something. Like, it's like, a level or two above, like, Asylum schlock. But it's not, like, don't go and expect, like, The Conjuring or something. Like, it's just, like, it's very schlocky, low-budget, like, horror movie. But, It's decent. I think you have to like rent it. Like if it's actually ends up like where you don't have to like pay to rent it, if it's just streaming somewhere at some point, maybe check it out. But I would not pay to get a DVD or like pay to like get it on digital or anything.
Gotcha.
And then the other movie I saw is I got from my Netflix discs. Service. I got The Musketeer, the 2001 Ooh. Version of The Three Musketeers.
The one where there's like kung fu in there for no reason.
Yeah. So yeah, the big selling point of that one was that there was a like a Hong Kong, Zizin Zong was the action director for that movie. He's Jet Li's stunt double, and he choreographed all the action for The Musketeer. That was like the big like selling point of it, trying to like distinguish it from like other, you know, Three Musketeers adaptations. I gotta say though, like I didn't really feel it in, like the opening sequence, like the first big fight where like D'Artagnan fights like guys in the bar is very like Hong Kong. There's a lot of like crazy stuff going on in that one, where like he's like literally like he's in like the ceiling, like flipping between like the rafters, like going like rolling his way down the rafters on the ceiling and like jumping on barrels, like fighting from barrels and stuff. And then the final sequence where it's just, like they like he ends up in like a room full of ladders, just like a room that has like a million ladders in it, and he's just like fighting Tim Roth on these ladders. It's also like very Hong Kong, but like a lot of stuff in the middle, like it doesn't
I thought there was a battle with like a he uses a rope.
That's also in like the finale. That's like part of the finale. Is, like he's climbing up a tower and like he's like fighting people on ropes, and then like he ends up in like he chases like Tim Roth down like a. Some stairs ends up in like
no,
like,
but doesn't he use like a rope as a weapon at one point too?
Maybe. There's like a scene where like he's climbing up like this giant tower to like
that's get on
to,
the, like, that was on like the poster.
Yeah, he's climbing a rope up to like the room where like Tim Roth is like holding like the queen and like Mina Savari, who's like D'Artagnan's like love interest, and then like and then enemy soldiers are like jumping down on their own ropes and fighting him, and like so it's like they're like running along the walls of the tower fighting each other on ropes. So that's like a part of like the finale, and then there's like the big like ladder fight at the end where it's just like they're probably throwing like every ladder in France in this room. Like it's absurd how many ladders are in that room, but I guess like all the action in the middle of the movie like doesn't it could have been it felt like it could have been directed like anybody. It didn't have like that to me. It didn't have like a particular like Hong Kong action flair to it or anything really. So I hadn't seen it before last week, but then that's what I'd heard about this one. It's like, oh, it's like this is like the Hong Kong action Musketeer movie, like. And yeah, I was a little disappointed by that. I was expecting like crazy, Jet Li or Jackie Chan style action, but except for like the opening, the end sequence, like not really anything like you haven't seen before in other like Musketeer movies, and also just like a lot of weird like differences or like. Weird changes from like other Musketeer movies that have been like before or after like this one like definitely is like it's called the Musketeer and definitely is like it's like D'Artagnan movie, and then the actual like three Musketeers are like in the background like they're like Porthos, Aramis, and Athos are like just like background characters basically, or side characters, and they have like no personality between, like, they all feel like the same person. Like they have no personality at all, really, between them.
I feel like D'Artagnan does like most of the movie, right? Who plays everyone else?
I don't. It's like it, no one memorable is playing anyone in like is playing like Aramis, Porthos, and Athos are not played by anyone like really memorable or anything. And then Justin Chambers is playing D'Artagnan, who I think he's on like. Grey's Anatomy now or something, or like that's what he's I think that's his most recent thing, but it's D'Artagnan and then like featuring the Musketeers. Like that's what this movie is. And also like another thing is like Cardinal Richelieu, who's like usually like this like because in the past it's been like, you know, Tim Curry's played him, or like Christoph Waltz, or Peter Capaldi, or all these actors who are like unleash and like shoot scenery and like it's like these like giant mustache twirling villains, and like this Cardinal Richelieu is so like ineffective and like not threatening, and like it's like that's like a huge disappointment. Like Tim Roth should have been Cardinal Richelieu. He's like, he's this other character, Febre, who is supposed to be like, there's also a character in like the Musketeers, like kind of mythology, like Rochefort.
Yeah, the guy who that supposedly killed D'Artagnan's dad or something.
Yeah, kills D'Artagnan's parents. Like Mads Mikkelsen played him in like the Paul W.S. Anderson Insanity. And I think like Michael Westcott played him in like the Disney version.
Yep.
Michael Wincott. But yeah, Rochefort is like, he's like kind of like, you know, like Richelieu's main henchman, and Richelieu doesn't do any fighting. He has Rochefort do all his fighting, but like in this movie, like Tim Roth, like Fabre, just like he's the main villain. He takes over everything. And Rochefort's just like, I can't control him. I can't control. You have to stop him. I can't control him. Like he's going crazy. Fabre's just doing his own. Like he's not under like Richelieu's orders. He's just off doing he's doing whatever the hell he wants to do. Kill the queen and like cause war between France and England,
which I think eventually happens anyway.
Yeah, I mean that's always like the plot of like Three Musketeers stuff is like they always have to like stop England and France from having like war with each other because Richelieu wants a war to happen, then he'll like take over, he'll use that to like take over France or whatever. But yeah, I mean I. Compared to like other adaptations, I was not really a fan of this one compared to like other like it's definitely not like I definitely prefer like the 93 Disney one or like the even like the Paul W. S. Anderson one is like way more fun and like even and like the steampunk stuff makes that one like much more like unique and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And even that definitely even like the like there was the BBC like TV series that was like four seasons. That one was like awesome. Anyone has not seen that yet, like check that out, because that's like just like super fun. That show felt like a throwback to like 90s syndication. Like that felt like it should have been like, it would have been on after Xena or something. Like it was because it was like this like very like episodic show, but like there was like with kind of an overarching plot every season, but like yeah, it was just fun like single adventures, like this like adventure show. That would definitely would have been like at home on like UPN or something on like Saturday afternoon or something. But I've seen this version now, so I think I've seen most of like the kind of modern era Musketeers movies. I don't think I've seen like there's like a I think it was like the 50s or 60s there was like a or Oh, was it the 70s? Yeah, 70s one I think is a big one too. But I think that one's more like a humor version. But I think that one has like Christopher Lee and stuff in it, or like Christopher Lee's in one of them. I think that's one with Christopher Lee's in, and like Oliver Reed and Michael York and like Richard Chamberlain were in that one. Yeah,
I mean it's like every few years is always a new Musketeer though.
Yeah, I mean it's public domain, so like anyone can just do whatever the hell they want. So, I'm always a sucker for like a Three Musketeers thing. I'll watch whatever if there's a new Three Musketeers thing, I'll probably watch it at some point. So, but yeah, I would rank the Musketeer like for me like the lowest one below so the other like kind of modern ones. So, so that's it for me this week. So we can wrap things up. Definitely have a site. I have a review of Exorcist Vengeance if you want to read my review of that movie. And you can check out all the trailers that come out this week. You can check out the Oscar nominations. And then come back in a couple weeks, we'll have our Triple Threat commentary up there. And you can still head over and check out our commentary from last month, which was Free Jack. So you can head over and watch the Emilio Estevez classic Free Jack with us. And yeah, all the other regular features that go up on the site every week are up there as well. So head over and check all that stuff out. And for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.